The biggest thing that maybe people don't mention is that I think our vocabulary is broken. Like the way we talk about security, the way that we think about security, we get very tied up in knots on it. Is this cybersecurity? Is this personnel security? Is this physical? Is it access control? Is it a compliance problem?
The environment is changing so fast now with AI. Everyone seems like their hair's on fire.
If agents and AI can adapt their tactics in the midst of conducting the attack because they learn and modify their behavior in real time, there is no playbook like that. The playbook changes while it's being played, which makes it very difficult to defend against, and it just requires a different kind of thinking from security executives on how you cope with that. The ability for bad guys to do things is getting much, much faster, much, much easier.
Welcome to Secure Access with John Dillard, your front door to the future of compliance, security, and tech. Powered by Sign-In Solutions, we bring you bold conversations with industry leaders who are shaping how organizations protect people, data, and spaces. If you're serious about smarter, safer access, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to the Secure Access Podcast. My name is Adam Cleveland and I will be your guest host for the next 30, 45 minutes. The Secure Access Podcast is a show about real talk, real people, and real security. We're cutting through the noise. This isn't about fluff or jargon. We're here to bring the truth the security industry won't say out loud. And to do that, we have a very special guest. I'm honored to call in my friend and a mentor, John Dillard. He will be your host for the episodes moving forward, but I have the honor of introducing him and interviewing him during this show. Welcome, John.
Oh, thank you, Adam. I feel like you've built it up. Now I have to overperform with that stellar introduction you just gave. Glad you're doing the opening introduction. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is exciting. And, you know, John, you have a pretty awesome background. You know, we met through a technology marketing engagement. I had the privilege of working with Threat Switch before they were acquired by Sign-In Solutions. John, through that process, I just want you to talk a little bit about your background, your story, your why. Share that with us.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of ended up, like a lot of people in this business, it was a bit accidental. I started out in security. I was actually at CIA. Long, long time ago, right out of college. It was an amazing place for your first job. Was working on nuclear proliferation, nuclear weapons security. So, I mean, it was, you know, you're 20 nothing. It's incredible. And believe it or not, after that, I kind of tried to leave the security space. Ended up going to business school. I had ideas that I wanted to do something more businessy. So I figured I should go get a business degree. And did that with the option of maybe returning to CIA or doing something else. So I did commercial management consulting for a minute, but I was in New York. I actually left my first job after graduate school and went to New York to join a startup right before the dot-com bubble burst. So my timing was terrible. They went down in flames. I found myself at KPMG, and then September 11th happens. So that September 11th for me was sort of, it pulled me back into the community. I found myself in a hard hat, gas mask, on the recovery site. Doing work for KPMG there for several months, which I think recast my entire career path. I mean, that moment pulled me back into security on a variety of fronts, including my first job after that was security related for, you know, intelligence community through a company called Touchstone. And then my companies that started after that ended up getting pulled into the national security space. So up to and including Threat Switch. So that's sort of the formation of the security career for me. But I think had I not been in New York on that day, working for that company, I don't know if I'd be here talking to you, but that's why I'm here.
And I'm sorry if I missed it, but what was it about that day, that time at KPMG that really sparked this for you?
Well, I think being on the ground, it was 2 weeks after the towers fell and they pulled our team in there and they found out that I had intelligence background. And so they grabbed me off of whatever project I was working on because KPMG had a really close relationship with the city of New York. And said, okay, Dillard, you're going to go manage teams. And we worked in 12-hour shifts in full gear doing, it was a mix of forensic accounting and sort of operations consulting work for the city. And I'm in the bottom of the pit talking to welders who were trying to keep the river from coming in. And I think just watching people work in that high-stakes situation and quite honestly seeing some stuff that nobody should ever have to see, I think I got very up close and personal with the consequences of a security failure in a way that when I was at CIA, it was all very abstract and somewhat academic. I think that being on the ground in those situations, there are a ton of people who are a lot smarter and more effective than I am who have been in much more serious situations. I was never really unsafe unless I got run over by a track hoe. That was probably worse than it happened. But I think it changes your perspective on why we are in this business, if you could see it first. That was my taste of seeing it firsthand, and it's sort of changed my trajectory.
Serious consequences, but I mean, this really plays in well to kind of the vision we have for today's episode, which is really talking about what's broken in today's security playbook. And, you know, John, when we've talked in the past, you shared that the traditional security playbook may be outdated. Let's start there. Tell me a little bit about what you think's not working.
A number of things. Say the biggest thing that maybe people don't mention is that I think our vocabulary is broken. Like the way we talk about security, the way that we think about security, we get very tied up in knots on it. Is this cybersecurity? Is this personnel security? Is this physical? Is it access control? Is it a compliance problem? And a lot of companies and organizations, and even some security professionals, they bucket this stuff in an arbitrary way that causes us to talk right past each other, even inside the same organizations. When in reality, everything in the end is, especially now, everything is a technology problem, including the physical problems. Everything is an AI problem. Everything in the end is a physical problem. I mean, you can't really divorce these things from each other. And I think the problem is that most of the solutions that are out there succumb to, and a lot of our corporate and organizational practices fall victim to, is this siloing of the functions in a way that prevents really holistic cultural adaptations to security threats and challenges that persist all over the place. So I think it's really about how we talk about it and how we organize ourselves. It's a big problem, which is the reason why I don't like a lot of the terms that we use. If we could do better at that, I think it would make a big difference.
I like what you pointed out about the vocabulary. And even you brought up AI. Some people might not know this about you, but you're an author.
I wrote a book. I'm not sure it was a good book, but I did write a book.
Yeah, well, the Amazon reviews are pretty good. But I'll say this. It's called Micro Slices. And in that book, you actually discussed how AI and automation are probably going to change white-collar work.
I did.
And now, considering where we're at, tell us more about that.
So I like to crack the book open and show people things that I was right about. It's like a party trick. Even like nobody wanted to hear it at the time, which is fine. Really, when I was talking about microslices, I was talking about agents. There was just the word agent was not a thing yet. But the idea that you take services, any kind of analytical white collar services, security being part of that, personnel and all those related functions, and have very, very small microslices deployed that are AI enabled to solve a very niche problem rather than have humans do it. I mean, that's the premise of the book. And so that was the idea. And I kind of think that's what you're seeing play out. I wish I'd had a better title and I wish I'd released it like last year because I probably would have sold more books. That was the idea. And really the impetus for what became Threat Switch was, I mean, I wrote that book in some ways. It was catharsis for myself to start that company, which ended up being Partisan Solutions.
Thinking about where we're at today and the content or the book that you wrote, are there any parallels that you see between the transformation and the evolution of security practices in classified environments as a result of AI?
In classified environments, you know, that's an I don't know question because I think how AI gets deployed without having the world internet to train on in a sort of, you know, contained area, that's a little bit of a different challenge. So as it relates to, you know, organizations that are dealing with, you know, basically air-gapped systems that, you know, the model can't go out and gather information. You've got to store the models inside that space and train it on the data you have, which in the case of intelligence agencies is obviously substantial. How that plays out, I think, is a little bit of a mystery because to me, the curve starts to bend with AI and agents, the more interconnected they are. And by definition, you're disconnecting. So I think the jury's out for me on how that'll get deployed. It's interesting to see companies like Andrew Hill and Palantir, who are really using massive data sets and robotics to do interesting things in defense and security and how they leverage AI. I think those are the companies to watch. among others, for who's going to make the biggest difference in that space.
The environment is changing so fast now with AI. Everyone seems like their hair's on fire. Like, if you're a security leader today, like, what's really at stake?
You know, it's all tied to consequences, right? So if you're a security leader, inaction, all it does is increase the probability of whatever that consequence is, right? So I think for companies who are not dealing in life or death stuff, the consequences are physical and IP, and the risks are the same. I think the consequences related to those risks might not be different today than they were 2 years ago, other than the fact that it's easier to mine more data and extract more faster. But the probability of something terrible happening, which is the other side of the equation, that's getting higher by the second.
Right.
And we used to, like, I went to Mach 37, which went through an accelerator called Mach 37 up in DC. Highly recommended. Incubated a lot of great cybersecurity startups in that region around DC. We talked about playbooks all the time. And cybersecurity playbooks are basically what the bad guys are using to figure out how to do a particular bad thing, right? So phishing, you know, network penetration, you name it, they run that playbook. And we would talk about the compressing time between playbooks. So it used to be 2 years and they changed the playbook, then it was 18 months, then it was 12 months. Well, the thing about AI and the thing that in action it will sort of exacerbate for a lot of companies is that the collapse in the playbook is now within the playbook, right? Mm-hmm. So if agents and AI can adapt their tactics in the midst of conducting the attack, because they learn and modify their behavior in real time, there is no playbook lifestyle. The playbook changes while it's being played, which makes it very difficult to defend against. And it just requires a different kind of thinking from security executives on how you cope with that. The cost of inaction are no worse than the consequences that you have to bring to bear. Save a lot of money, you have a lot of consequences. You have a little money, you don't. But the ability for bad guys to do things is getting much, much faster, much, much easier. You don't need to be an expert to do this. So I think that it makes it very, very hard. Not to mention the fact that it's blended with security and physical and information and personnel such that, you know, it's not cyber. It's a coherent, coordinated set of risks across all security domains that prey on companies that don't do anything to prepare for it.
So, John, you've worked as an intelligence officer, a company FSO, and then you launched a company that basically changed how facility security officers to get their work done. If you're a corporate FSO right now, like, what would you tell them to start thinking about or start doing to prepare for this dynamic shifting playbook that they're facing?
The corporate FSOs, and this is it depends a little bit on whether you're getting started or you're a leader, right? Because, you know, what you achieve through others shifts. If you're an individual contributor, I think that the number one mandate is to learn constantly. If you're not reading and studying, however you choose to do that, there are a lot of ways you can choose to learn and study on a number of different interrelated security disciplines as an individual contributor, you are going to be screwed. So that's just it. The world is going to blow by you in about 2 seconds. So if you're an FSO or security officer or security manager that's an individual contributor role, the number one thing that you can do to help your organization is study the things that you don't know about, right? If you are an expert in personnel security, you need to go get smart on what people might call cyber. Yeah. Maybe it's AI or agentic risk or it's physical security. And conversely, if you're a physical security guy, maybe you're retired FBI and you went to go work for a company and you're, instead of kicking down doors, you're kicking down people's office cubicles, yelling at them for not doing what they're supposed to do. You need to learn about AI. You need to learn about personnel security. You got to learn about the other side of the business that you're not in. And if you're a security leader, I think the mandate starts to shift. Security leaders, and this is one of the things I really am excited about for this podcast, is to really dig into the security leadership in particular. Not only do you have a mandate to lead and obviously set a direction for the team and help them figure out where to go, you yourself have to be learning at a breakneck pace too, and then motivating that team to action. So in security specifically, that means to some extent predicting the future. Like, the best leaders predict the future. The best leaders are learning continuously, and the best leaders are motivating teams toward action. That's what they do, which is not really different from any other leader, But in the context of security, I think it's harder because of the pace of change is super breakneck.
I'm inspired. You know, I love that you pointed out the audience, right? The security leadership. When we brought this idea to you to start to host a podcast, obviously there's a lot of ideas, a lot of things we want to do. What is your chief aim for the audience? Like, what do you really want them to get out of this podcast going forward?
I hope that they want to get out of this the same thing I want to get out of it, which is to learn from really interesting people. I mean, there's just nothing better. And those of you who are listening to this, I mean, if you get in that really good conversation with someone who has great stories, has a point of view, and is willing to share that point of view to help you learn something, this is going to be great. I mean, that's what I'm excited about. So the people who are sitting on the other side of the camera here, if they're passionate about some discipline of security or they're excited about innovation, specifically technology, I think is usually going to be the case, although not always. There are other kinds of innovation. And leadership, how do we get the world from A to B on this stuff, given the future of security and where we're headed? And how do you actually make a team get there? What are the things that we have to do? How do we inspire them? How do we paint that picture? How do we insist on results? How do we measure success? I mean, what are the things that leaders do to make this change happen in the world? I think that's what's going to be exciting from what we hear from guests. So, and I think we'll have fun doing it. So that's the gist for me.
There's a call to audiences everywhere. If that lands with you, email us and we'll get you on the show with John. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. John, in your background, you've been someone who's advocated for security clearance reform. You've sat on policy councils with INSA and, you know, et cetera. What do you believe is the most critical change needed in how we approach the relationship between government security requirements and commercial innovation?
Couple things.
Okay.
I would say one is simplification. The other is speed. One of the challenges that I think we have, and there are people who are looking at this, is the regulatory regime. It's set up to try to do good things, right? You're trying to protect the country from harm, protect company from harm, protect IP, protect all state secrets, whatever they happen to be. But not just that. There are a lot of government regulations that have to do with privacy protection. It's what HIPAA is all about. The problem with the regulatory structures we have is that they are so unbelievably complicated after year after. I mean, we're talking going back to the 40s. Layer after layer after layer after layer of this Byzantine set of rules that makes it almost impossible for anyone but the biggest companies to really adapt and innovate in the context of security. You know, to the extent that that's the same thing with, you know, HIPAA and with privacy regulations, it extends beyond the national security sphere into healthcare and innovation in other sectors. They just don't work. I mean, the thing that we talked about in terms of the risk and the speed of the playbook collapsing and the fact that AI-enabled security risks mean they can adapt in real time. They don't care that our regulation was written 25 years ago and it's 400 pages long. Yeah. They're going to get break stuff and they're going to do it as fast as they can, which brings me to the second piece of this, which is simplification of the regulatory regime so the companies can actually follow it so that we can move faster. Right? Companies, all companies, must be able to very quickly adopt the right processes and technologies to protect themselves and their customers or their, you know, in their countries and their people and their facilities. And in some cases, life and property. And they need to be able to do it really fast. And it's a big problem if the regulatory regime actually gets in the way of companies deploying very effective countermeasures, right? And I think that's kind of where we are. Companies spend as much more money on checking compliance boxes as they do actually improving access control or identity verification or network access or 100 other things that are actual attack vectors. So I think the regulatory regimes have to be able to adapt faster and companies have to have a light enough regulatory regime to be able to deploy security effectively and very quickly. So that's a two-part problem.
So John, did you say that complying with those regulations don't protect you, but the regulations are supposed to protect you? What's in the...
The controls, I mean, you know, if you look at regulations, generally the term of art here is, you know, regulations is a set of controls, right? And a control might have to do with something like access control that requires everybody to have a password for a thing. So the password you know, to the extent that passwords can protect you, that's another podcast. We'll talk about that later. But let's just pretend that they are for a second. The password is the thing that's the countermeasure. The regulation is not the countermeasure. The regulation requires you to have passwords, but complying with the regulation does not protect you from everything related to that. So companies have to think critically about what are we trying to protect with that password and what are the other countermeasures we're taking? Is that sufficient or not? As opposed to just checking a checklist, which is what a lot of compliance has turned into, is checking boxes. And look, you need to be able to do that. There has to be some mechanism. Compliance is extremely useful, especially in the context of national security and making sure that we have a supply chain for whatever it is in a corporate supply chain that's protected. So you need those things in place. But if the things themselves are consuming resources that should go to actual countermeasures, you got a problem, right? So there's this balance, and I think that we've lost our balance a little bit, and that the box checking has become more important than the things. You have to have both.
Okay, we've reached a point where I'm going to throw you some rapid-fire questions, John.
All right, got it. This could go very badly.
That's okay. Do the best you can.
Is this going to be scored? Because if it's scored, I'm out.
It is scored, actually. One regulation everyone underestimates.
I'm going to say CMMC because it is potentially incredibly far-reaching. It might reach its little fingers out into parts of the economy that we don't even recognize yet. So that's the one that I would worry about.
Worst security advice you've ever heard?
Hold my beer? No. I would say the worst I've ever heard is probably make your password something you can remember. That's terrible advice.
That's a great one. Best investment a security team can make right now?
I'll say identity verification. Like, are the people moving in and out of your perimeters? And I mean that in terms of both physical spaces and digital spaces. Are they actually the people that they say they are? And how do you know that? That's the thing I would focus on.
Tell me a book or resource you'd recommend to security leaders.
You know, I'm going to recommend one that's not a security book. And I happen to be in the middle of rereading it right now. And I'll say Tools of Titans, which is a Tim Ferriss book. And for the audience, if you're not familiar with Tim Ferriss, also a killer podcast. I don't know if it's as good as this one. It probably is. Tim Ferriss, written a number of books. Silicon Valley has been an incredible investor. Tools of Titans is a set of synopses of the hundreds of guests that he's had on his podcast over the years. And there are lessons in there for leadership, including there's some cybersecurity stuff in there too. It's also practical application in specific disciplines about how to be a more effective leader in person. And I think if you think about security leadership, the best way you can be a better security leader is to be a really good leader. There are a lot of excellent snippets in there that'll give you a very fast education in a relatively short.
I'm curious, who's been the most impactful security leader that you've ever worked with?
That's really interesting. Tricia Stokes. But I'm going to say Tricia because she was an SES in the Army when we were working on personnel security clearance reform. She helped lead the Army's effort or respond to the Navy Yard shooting. I mean, she was in the middle of a lot of the Afghanistan surge, obviously a government perspective on things. The thing I liked about Tricia is that she would break shift. Tricia was not afraid to run through walls for things that needed to get done. And there aren't that many people in government necessarily, especially in the bureaucratic layers, that will do that. They'll find reasons not to do things, and Tricia would had an act with finding a way to yes, and then persuading senior officials to say yes to her. So, you know, it's hard sometimes to get 3 and 4 stars to do the scary thing, and she was pretty good at persuading them to do it. So that's what I'll say. Tricia Stokes.
I love that. Okay, we're coming up on time. This was excellent. Really had a great time learning, hearing more from you.
I'm excited to do more of these. It's going to be great. And, you know, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to pick my brain and find out what I'm thinking as we launch this journey. It's going to be a blast.
Absolutely. It's going to be awesome. Just a quick note, we do have more shows coming with some really impressive thought leaders that we're bringing on from lots of big companies whose names you will recognize will be joining John. And we've got one episode coming up where we're going to expose how insider threats are slipping past outdated systems and what security leaders are doing to stay ahead.
You're helping me a ton. So this is ours. I also get to blame you for anything else that goes wrong. That's the best thing about sharing.
That's what marketing people are for.
That's great. It's perfect.
We do stuff and then we get blamed and it's all good. Now, listen, this is great. You know, I've worked with a lot of founders and a lot of technology leaders and just good people over my career. And you're a class act, John. You set the bar really high for founders, for security leaders. You are often the benchmark, I tell people when they say, Adam, what do you think makes a good CEO? I basically describe you. So it's an honor.
Thanks for that.
Definitely.
Thanks for joining us on Secure Access, brought to you by Sign-In Solutions. If you found today's conversation insightful, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. For more on transforming compliance, security, and workplace experiences, visit signinsolutions.com. Until next time, stay secure, stay informed.